And ask Member Probasco if he might determine a quorum.
Board Member Larson?
Present.
Board Member Bergy?
Present.
Board Member Taylor?
Here.
Board Member Underwood?
Here.
Board Member Hart?
Here.
Board Member Ponder?
Present.
And Board Member Probasco, and we have perfect attendance tonight, the quorum.
Wonderful. Thank you, Member Probasco. With that, Jubilee, will you provide us, Member Underwood will provide us with the board goals?
Yes. Matanuska Susitna Borough School District, vision, mission, beliefs, goals, and principles. Vision. Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission. Matsu School Borough District prepares all students for success. Beliefs. We believe that the needs and best interest of the students drive all decisions. All students can and want to learn. Educational choices and community participation are essential to student success. Goals: improve student success, achievement, and performance. Develop excellent educators and leaders. Use innovative practices to improve the education system. Include families and community members in the education of our students. Promote safe and healthy environments for all. Guiding principles. These guiding principles will drive our decisions and our responsibility to our students, families, and community. Stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, respect, collaboration, and commitment.
Thank you, Member Underwood. With that, if Member Taylor could please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you very much. Go ahead and entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
And is there any opposition to doing so? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes. And we will go ahead to move on to agenda item number 2, persons to be heard on non-agenda items. With that, there is a limit of 3 minutes per person per meeting. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to make comments? All right. Seeing none, and there are none online, we will go ahead and close out that agenda item. We will move to borough, city, state, and tribal reports. Dr. Traney, do we have any borough, city, state, or tribal reports?
No.
All right. Close out agenda item number 3 and move to agenda item number 4, administrative reports. Dr. Traney.
No administrative reports.
All right. With that, we'll move to agenda item number 5, which is the consent agenda. There's a number of different items on here that I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I'd like to make a motion to move item E off the consent agenda for discussion, or just open it for discussion.
Okay, that's 5E, the request for approval of Affordable Care Act ACA penalty payments. And you want to either, your motion, what was your motion, Member Bergy?
My motion would be either to move it down to action items or just open it up for discussion and then move it back to the consent agenda.
Okay, is there any opposition in opening it up? Is there a second to that? Is there a second?
I'll second it, but I don't think we can just open it up for discussion and then drop it back into the consent agenda.
Okay, so for
move it to item.
Okay.
Move it to action.
All right, so the motion is currently that item E of the consent agenda be moved down under action items. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, and that was your motion seconding your Member Larson, you seconded that motion. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. With that, we'll go ahead and take a vote on that. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Bergy?
Yes.
Member Probasco?
Yes.
Member Hart?
No.
Member Underwood?
Yes.
Member Taylor?
Yeah.
And I, too, vote yes. We will move that 5E, request for approval for Affordable Care Act penalty payment, to action item. With that, that leaves back on the table. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended?
I move to approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Right. Is there any objection to approving the consent agenda? Hearing and seeing none, that passes. With that, we'll move to public comment on action items and non-action items. Is there anybody in the public who would like to comment on action items or non-action items? If you would like to come up in an orderly fashion, you can feel free to do so at this time. Seeing none, is there any online? There are none online. One more time for public comment on action items and non-action items. All right, seeing none, we will close out agenda item 6, public comment on action items and non-action items, and move to action items, item number 7. With that, we have superintendent of schools contract. Is there a motion and a second?
I move to approve the superintendent of schools contract.
Second.
Wonderful. With that, is there an administrative report on this, Dr. Trainee?
No administrative report.
Right. With that, is there any board discussion? Please, Member Larson.
Number 2 on the base salary increase by $26,000. I would like to know where that $26,000 is coming from and how we are attaining that $26,000 to pay the superintendent.
Excellent. Thank you. Dr. Trainee?
I'm going to ask Mr. Fulp to speak to this. In general, I believe that the intention would be that we could move funds in the next budget revision from the board. What's budgeted currently for the board to this category? Can you speak to that, Mr. Fulp?
Yes. So the board will be receiving a fall budget revision in the coming weeks. If this contract revision is approved by the school board, this is a cost that we would make sure is fully budgeted for and accounted for in that fall revision so that costs are covered and we have a balanced budget. In terms of what is in the school board's non-personnel budget, I am just pulling that up right now. So the non-personnel budget for the school board has a total of $137,000, and the majority of that is dedicated to staff travel and other purchase services.
Member Larson?
Does that $140,000, is that expenditure utilized every year, or does it go back into the general fund, or how much from year to year is usually used in the last, say, four years?
Through the chair, the last full audited year of activity, there was $106,000 of expenditures. That was FY 21. In FY 20, there was $147,000 of expenditures. And in FY 19, there was $111,000 of expenditures.
So how much of that was, how much of it's been used each year? I guess is the question. Do you know?
Yeah. Through the chair again, in FY 19, $111,000. In FY 20, $147,000. And in FY 21, $106,000. Currently, the board has budgeted $137,000.
And what are those? I'm sorry. I'm just a little bit foggy on that. What are the expenditures used for?
Majority of expenditures in the school board's non-personnel budget are assigned to staff travel. Mileage reimbursement would be the main cost there that school board's members receive that amount allowance monthly. And then other purchase services, $71,000 is budgeted there.
And the proposal here is to take, through the chair, is to take the $26,000 out of the school budget. The school board budget, although it looks like we utilize the majority of the school board budget, is that correct?
I was doing quick math, Mr. Fulp. So it seems like of 2 of the 3 years, the school board actually expended the budget, but the other 2 years that you talked about, they would have been short of expending it.
Yes.
I assume it was budgeted at the similar amount that it was budgeted at this year.
That would be a reliable assumption there. I wasn't prepared to do averages or run exact amounts on what these line item details entail, but I can give you an average spend over the last 3 years.
I know that you already said this, but just to clarify and make it simple, the majority of the money is used for school board members, for either the travel money or the health care or what?
Through the chair, this would be the non-personnel budget, so it would not include health care costs. Majority of the expense does look like it's going to staff travel, which would be mileage reimbursement. But it would also entail any additional staff travel, any other additional board travel, like if there was a trip to Juneau or Washington, D.C., that would be the account that would be used. Those would be two destinations that in the past, historically, school board members have traveled to. So that account is one of the larger expenditure areas. However, in the past 3 years, we have not fully expended that. The last full audited year of activity and staff travel was $25,000. Currently budgeted is $56,882. The average spend over the last 3 years, based on Member Larson, your line of questioning, is $121,972 would be the average over the last 3 years of audited activity. Currently budgeted is $137,000.
Thank you. Just one comment. I will not be voting in favor of the superintendent's contract unless it can be shown that the $26,000 is a cut out of somewhere within the budget. And right now I'm not seeing that. That $26,000, I thought was going to come out of the school board budget that we were not utilizing, but I would like to make an assurance that we are not giving the increase in the base salary and taking that $26,000 that we are actually cutting something within the budget to afford that $26,000, because that's a $26,000 increase that is not normally in the budget.
Thank you, Member Larson. And just as a follow-up to Mr. Fulp, in relation to the questions that were just being asked, it sounded, from what I was hearing, I'm more of a visual learner, but from what I was hearing, a large portion, if not the majority, of the superintendent's contract would be able to come from that which was not expended out of that budget or that line item. Is that accurate?
Yes, we could prepare the fall revision to represent that, and then the board would approve that at the time of the fall revision passing.
Got it. So it would come out of that one area, and that would be the area of the cut?
If that's the will of the board, as it's approved, that we can do that.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Member Larson?
So if that's the will of the board, and we go over that budget, I assume that then our travel or some of the money that we would normally get monthly will also be cut. I don't want to see that this $26,000 just all of a sudden be laid out into the main budget. I want to see an actual cut in a program to make up this money. And hopefully we can put that in the wording and revision that the increase in the superintendent's base salary was due to a substantial, or that $26,000 cut in a budget that's not going to be backfilled. Thank you.
And I would just throw out there, I guess I'm looking at it from the perspective of $26,000. $26,000. That's just three zeros. So those three zeros, I have full faith that the staff would be able to find that. But with that, any other comments? Please, Member Hart.
Just really quick, to put this in perspective, $26,000 is like, I think, a tenth of a percent of the budget, total budget. I think he's going to be able to find the money somewhere. Just vote of confidence.
Any other comments, Member Larson?
Just to follow up on that, I do agree. I'm not. I just want to make sure it is, because anything. And here's the next, I guess, question, and I'll get off my podium. Any increase in salaries, health care, commodities, which have gone up by 12%, has to be, we have to cut within the budget. We have to find a cut within the budget. So any increases whatsoever, unless we get a substantial growth in population, which means we're not hiring additional teachers because we're taking that additional cuts by increasing classroom pupils. So our next upcoming budget, is it a deficit budget or does it have a surplus in it? And then I won't ask any more questions.
Mr. Fulp, can you address that question?
Yes, the long-term forecast does project a deficit in which we would, for FY24 at this time, the plan is to rely on the remaining ESSER III dollars to balance the budget in FY24.
Thank you, Member Fulton. And with that, Member Berge.
I just would like to say that Member Larson's point is valid, that Dr. Traney works for the board. We have indicated with the new contract that we value his services. It would send a message to the district that we would be willing to sacrifice our own budget to ensure that this contract goes through. I am fully confident that Mr. Fulp will be able to bring this money forward from somewhere, but I also look at, you know, the message sent that we were willing to sacrifice for something that we as a board value. And that needs to be plain so the layman can see, not hidden and buried in budgetary action. So I agree with Member Larson that it should come from one of the line items assigned to the school board.
Thank you, Member Berge. Appreciate that. And I would agree as well that we have the ability on one particular line item for a relatively small budget of the overall budget to be able to pull from to make this happen. So thank you. Any other comments from board members? Member Probasco,
yeah,
please.
Through the chair to Ms. Gardner. Increasing the base salary to $239,000, how does that... We always compare ourselves to the Big Five. You know, we're the second largest district in the state. If there's any, I don't want to put you on the spot, but comparative, I mean, how is our superintendent compensated, say, compared to Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau and Kenai? Thank you.
Member Probasco, through the chair, thank you for the question. The superintendent's salary would be very comparable to the Anchorage salary, which was just recently published. I could not quote for you the exact amount. We could certainly provide that in an upcoming board connect. And those two salaries are higher than the other three of the large five. So Fairbanks, Kenai, and Juneau are lower. I don't believe any of those three are over 200,000. I think they're under 200,000, though they differ, and I'd have to look up those numbers. I could certainly provide them. But our earnings is very comparable with Anchorage's new contract for FY23 for the new superintendent.
Not to put you on the spot here, Dr. Traney, but just since the Big Five were brought up, could you remind me how many of the Big Five stayed open during the course of a two-year pandemic?
Yeah, we were the only ones to stay up.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your service and what you do for our school district. With that, is there any other further board discussion? Member Larson.
Just follow up, Dr. Trina, just a quick question. How many years of teaching did you have before you became a superintendent?
Well, I have taught 30 years because I taught while I was superintendent, and I taught for 14 years, I think, before I became a principal, but I taught while I was a principal as well. So lots of years.
Just thank you. I just wanted to point out Dr. Traney's experience, his work here in the Mat-Su Borough compared to the experience and background of the new superintendent at Anchorage Anchorage School District is not even comparable between the two, and you pay for what you get. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Larson. Before going to vote, any other last call for board discussion? All right. With that, we will go ahead and vote. Member Taylor?
Yes.
Member Underwood?
Yes.
Member Hart?
Yes.
Member Probasco?
Yes.
Member Berge?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. That passes unanimously. And I do apologize. I believe we're all logged in and we could have done a vote. So the next one we're going to move to, which is under the amended agenda, we have the consent agenda item E that's now moved under the action item, which is a request for approval of Affordable Care Act penalty payments. Is there a motion and a second?
I move to bring now item B, request for the approval of Affordable Care Act ACA penalty payments forward.
Second.
Thank you. Dr. Traney, is there an administrative report?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Associate Superintendent Gardner to come and speak to this item.
Good evening, board members. For the record, Catherine Gardner, Associate Superintendent of Human Resources. School Board Policy 3300 requires the school board to approve in advance, if possible, any fines or penalty payments. This is the first assessment of penalty payments under the Affordable Care Act that the district has received. These are for two individuals in our district who were employed at the time and are for differing months from when they were eligible. The Affordable Care Act generally, I'll be very clear about that, it is legislation that has a lot of detail and specifics with it. But generally speaking, there is a penalty that's referred to as the employer shared responsibility penalty. And there are two penalties that can be assessed. One can be very large and the other is much smaller. So the first larger penalty would be if the district failed to provide coverage to at least 95% of our full-time employees. And remember, full-time under the Affordable Care Act is working at least 30 hours a week. So not necessarily an FTE comparison with how we talk about full-time. So if we failed to provide coverage to 95% of our full-time employees, then the IRS will assess a penalty for all of our full-time employees, which would be in the millions. Second to that penalty, and that is a penalty that we don't anticipate to be assessed, we have been fine with our 95% threshold. We have met that in each of the years since we've been doing our reporting. So the second penalty is an individual penalty that's looked at on a monthly basis. So for any individual who is not offered a level of coverage that meets the minimum value standard and is considered affordable under the IRS definitions, if an individual goes to the exchange, purchases insurance on the exchange, and qualifies for a subsidy, then there is the possibility that we are assessed a penalty on a monthly basis per individual. So that second round of penalties, that's what these are. And again, it was two individuals during calendar year 2019. I think one for 3 months and one for 2 months, but we provided that information in the packet. And you could see the total penalty in this situation is $5,000. And certainly if there are more specific questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to do that.
Member Berge?
So we are being assessed this penalty because two of our employees were not insured for a period of time, or what? Explain to me how this could occur. And I understand if by sharing any information it will violate privacy and feel free to state it if that occurs.
Certainly, Member Berge, through the chair. I think I can provide sufficient information without talking about individuals or naming individuals and talking about scenarios. So the district, we know and we accept a certain level of risk under the Affordable Care Act. We do not provide health insurance options to every individual that's employed in our system. And for the most part, we work to make sure that we mitigate our risk as much as possible. So for example, for temporary and on-call staff, we're monitoring the hours that they're working so that they are not meeting those full-time thresholds. And so we don't run the risk of having a penalty that's assessed. However, there are certain situations, for example, if we have long-term substitutes, it's really important that we have consistency in the classroom when the teacher's absent. Those individuals are certificated, but they're not part of a bargaining unit, nor is the district offered to them health insurance. Remember, these penalties, as they're assessed, are about $300 a month. The health insurance cost for that individual, you know, is over $20,000. So we're monitoring it and mitigating risk to the maximum extent possible. But there are individuals who we recognize may be eligible for a subsidy, may pursue that subsidy, and thus we could be assessed a penalty. So there's either the situation where we don't provide them with an offer of coverage, in which case it depends on, you know, their other personal circumstances. And there are also individuals whose offer of coverage might not be considered affordable. And affordable is a definition that the IRS has established either based on the federal poverty line or the individual's W-2 reported earnings. And so one of the individuals in this scenario had an offer of coverage, but that offer of coverage wasn't considered affordable. And one of the individuals was on a long-term leave, under which a look-back period shows that they were eligible for coverage, but under our work rules, we don't provide them with health coverage when they're on a long-term leave. So those were two situations where individuals went to the exchange, purchased health insurance under the exchange, and in filing their taxes, qualified for a subsidy, and we didn't meet one of the safe harbors, meaning we did make an offer and or it was affordable. And thus, the penalties are assessed, and they're looked at on a monthly basis. So as you can see, for what was reported, you have I think it's the same individual who had access to a penalty assessed for the full 12 months, and then you had another individual who only had the penalty on the district assessed for a limited period of time.
Thank you for that, Ms. Gardner. Would follow-on question to that would be, is have there been any procedures put in place to ensure that this does not happen again, or is this so unique that there's just no way to plan for it?
Through the chair, the school district recognizes that under the Affordable Care Act, we may have future penalties that are assessed. It would not be a good business decision for us to mitigate 100% all possibility for penalties. We'd have a couple of situations. One, we wouldn't have staff that are really needed to perform certain functions. Or two, we would experience a significantly higher cost than the possibility of penalties in the offering of health insurance to certain groups and individuals. So we have tried to make sure that we have procedures in place to mitigate penalties. But these penalties are essentially a reality, and we know that there is the possibility that they can be assessed under the provisions of the Affordable Care Act.
And in our workforce, what's a rough percentage of our workforce that could fall into these unique situations? It sounds like it's limited to long-term temporary hires that move over a threshold of time on the payroll. So are we looking at tens of people, hundreds of people?
Through the chair, that's a very good question. It is not hundreds of people. And in any given month, I would estimate that we are working hard to keep it below 100. That's not necessarily the same people every time. There are a few scenarios that we're aware of that we're monitoring. Some of those are substitutes. Some of them are also individuals who stop working in permanent or full-time employment and want to substitute. We know we have a need for substitutes, a really important part of our workforce to make sure that schools stay open. And so we could tell individuals when they stop working in a permanent capacity that they're not allowed to sub, but we would suffer a different kind of hardship in that situation. So most of these are for most of the individuals who we identify that we might be at risk of a penalty would be in that group. And we really need those people to work as subs. They're familiar with our systems. What they want is flexibility. They're really valuable in being able to support when permanent staff are gone. And the way that the stability periods are monitored and take effect, the IRS has an expectation that we would continue coverage for them. But our work rules and our negotiated agreements don't prescribe that. So it's just it's a place in the law where what we're currently doing doesn't align exactly with what the ACA envisions. And for us, it's better, more effective, cost-effective, and efficient in terms of providing education to students to allow them to continue to work and accept the possible risk of some of those penalties, which, again, are so far have not been excessive. As I said, these are the first penalties that we've received. These are for calendar year 2019. I can't tell you with certainty that these are the only penalties from 2019, but I would anticipate that if there were others, we would have received them in the same notice. We did not receive a notice individually for every individual. We received one notice from the IRS with both people included. So far our penalties have not been large. This is certainly below the board's spending threshold in terms of amount, but we know that the board is to approve these because they are classified as a penalty, and that policy requires the board to approve any fines and penalties in advance when possible.
Member Larson?
The 95% threshold, when an employee is offered health insurance and turns it down, that does not cause that 95% threshold, does it?
Through the chair, employees don't have to accept health insurance. The school district has to make an offer. So if we have an offer of coverage that meets the minimum value standard and is considered affordable, then whether they take it or not is what is tracked and might trigger some of the individual penalties that have no longer been part of the Affordable Care Act but were part of it initially. So no, those people don't, put simply, count against us, and we wouldn't have a penalty for them.
Thank you. Any other board discussion? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to a vote. And with that, we'll go ahead and start with Member Hart.
Yes.
Member Probasco.
Yes.
Member Berge.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Underwood.
Yes.
Member Taylor.
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. And that passes unanimous, and I again forgot we are all here with the ability to do an electronic vote. My apologies. Hopefully I will have better success at the next meeting when we have action items on that day. With that, we'll close out agenda item 7, action items, and move to agenda item number 8, superintendent report, non-action items. Dr. Trainee, your superintendent update.
All right. I'd like to start with thanking you all for your support in my contract. This is year 33. I slept very little last night because I had that before school jitters. We started with all the principals today, and a major portion of what I'm going to talk about today is exactly what I showed the principals this morning. We'll start with, now that we've got, hold on, I'm trying to, there we are. School starts August 16th for grades 1 through 12, and then kindergarten starts on Tuesday, August 23rd. So if you're a person watching the board meeting, and this is your only source of information, you've heard it here when school starts. Speaking of school starting, it is a huge day because everyone brings their student to school in their own car that day, and we've decided to really challenge things and also have voting happen at the same time simultaneously in 16 of our sites. Ms. Morrissey has been doing an incredible job of, A, limiting those number of sites, working with the borough to reduce that number so the footprint is smaller, and then communicating out to the public kind of this idea that there are going to be times when you're going to be able to get to, you can come whenever you want, as long as the voting booth is open, but there's going to be some strategic times where your wait will be shorter. And that's going out via different kinds of media, including all of the social media and radio, and I'm sure it's in print somewhere as well. I did want to move to this next slide. Here's something that I heard through the budget committee meeting, and we talked about it in cabinet. And what we'd like to do is highlight a board policy each month. And so what we're with our principals and then therefore our staff, I would do it at the first board meeting of each month, like I'd bring it up to the board. And so the policy that we'd like to highlight this month with all of our administrators is BP 6020. I didn't put the whole policy here, and I think you're all familiar with it since you were all instrumental in adding this particular language. And what we're trying to do is look at each month and decide what things are most critical. So I'll give you an example. In November, we're going to have a big election. So in October, we're going to want to highlight all the policies about political speech, how employees should behave, those kinds of things. So we're going to try to be proactive. Originally, I think when I talked to folks on the board, we talked about coming up with like our top 10 for the year and doing them all at once. But we kind of know what will happen. I think it's a better plan for us to do it strategically. So with that said, I think if board members can think of policies that they think we should like try to reinforce with our administrators and then therefore our teachers, just let me know. Enrollment update, you'll see these for the next few meetings. As of this morning, I believe we're at 11,251 FTE enrolled, and we're expecting 19,200. We're literally gaining 1,000 plus a day, so we anticipate this number will be quite a lot larger by the time you see it next. Similar to last year, about 17% of our students are in correspondence. The last I heard, and this was last week, MatSU Central was already looking at like 150 students that had not gone to school in MatSU that were now enrolled in MatSU Central as of last week. It was a number close to that. I can't remember exactly what it was. So that's encouraging. Obviously, since we're just brand new in the enrollment process, everybody's behind. So there's really not much information we can get from this particular graph right now, but we'll use this same format at all of the meetings between now and account period in October. I know that you all are aware of this, but in case somebody on our online audience out there is watching, we are going to have 5 school board member seats up in the November 8th general election. They will be staggered. So like, for instance, School Board District 2 will be a 3-year term, but School Board District 3 will be a 1-year term. So we don't have this situation where you have huge percentage of the board being elected at any one time. Today, here's where I started talking with the principals. I described to them my dual role as fan and coach, and so I tried to be both the fan and the coach. And if you know me, I like the Portland Trailblazers. And so I made a joke about I'm the understated Portland fan, and when I talked to the principals, I actually showed pictures of Raiders fans and Chiefs fans and all those other fans. But I saved you guys that misery. The point here is that the person that I'm a fan of and the person I'm coaching in these is Damian Lillard, one of the best basketball players in the NBA. And that's because the folks that I get to work with are some of the best teachers and educators in the state. So I thanked him. I was thinking about this on the next slide. Really, our principals and teachers, other people who work, they just lived through the hardest 2 years in the state of Alaska's history educationally. Like, that's amazing. And they set an example for the state and across the nation, and I'm going to show you a little bit of data about that. So my coach mindset, I gave them 4 quotes that I think I really believe in, and I think they believe it too. And I'm talking about our principals. Children are apt to live up to what you believe of them, by Lady Bird Johnson. All boats rise and fall on the same tide. And I know you've heard me say these 4 at one time or another. The next slide, Henry Ford, if you think you can or think you can't, you're probably right. And those of us with the most have to want for all kids what we want for our own kids, a John Dewey quote that I've been saying for a long time. So
I went back to my absurd aspirations for my own children. I got to pick up my daughter last night at the airport. She's visiting. I haven't seen her since January. And I guess I was reflecting about, like, what did I want for them when they were going through high school? She's going to be a junior in college now. That's hard to believe. Well, I wanted them to have a rich academic experience that prepared them for any post-secondary opportunity they wanted, the military, the trades, college. I wanted them to graduate on time, obviously. I wanted to be able to be admitted anywhere they wanted to go, be successful once they got there, and have that choice 100% paid for. In other words, free. So if I want that for my own kids, next slide, what should I want for all the kids at MATSU? Well, that's the exact same thing if I go back to that Dewey quote. And I think our administrators, all of our principals, I think that they believe this too. And so the next page, if we were going to, I do think they believe this, because, and I have evidence of it. Yeah, which one? There it is. They kept us open for 2 years because that was best for all kids. They wanted for all kids what they would have wanted for their own. They believed that they could do it, all of those things. And they embraced academic change during that whole process. Like, I was up here saying absurd aspirations and trying to get them to change things, and they did it. So here comes, like, the evidence. I've showed you this one at the very end of the year last year. This is our number of AP tests given over time from 2017 to 2022. In 21 and 22, like, during the pandemic, we increased our number dramatically. Like, you know, it's approaching almost a threefold increase from 2020 to 2022. That's amazing. The next slide. And this is where I every opportunity I get to talk about this, I'm going to, because I think it's important for people to have this understanding. The point of an AP class is the rigor and the learning that students experience. It's not the threes, fours, and fives on the test. So I've been trying to come up with an analogy for what AP tests are. It's really a nationwide scholarship competition, like a track meet, with all kinds of events, like a track meet. You know, it has the, you know, javelin and shot put and discus and the 100 meter and the 400 meter and the, like, it has all of that. And we celebrate the people who come in first, second, and third. But that's not the whole point of a high school track meet. Like, we do it for all of the growth that kids have. There's most of the kids who participate in the high school track meet don't come in first, second, or third. That's the same way with AP test scores. We celebrate when a kid gets a 3, 4, or 5. The difference here is that we could have multiple kids get 3s, 4s, and 5s. So I'm going to talk about 3s, 4s, and 5s, but that isn't the point. That isn't the reason we're doing it. It's fun to talk about, but the real underlying reason is all the learning that the kids get, even the kids who didn't come in first, second, or third. You know, this is not, this is left over from the wrong, this isn't here. It shouldn't be here. PLCs. I don't know how that snuck in. Okay. Passing rate versus production rate. First of all, you can't pass or fail an AP test just like you can't pass or fail the 100 meter dash. Like, you can't pass or fail it. You can earn a college qualifying score. We like to talk about AP passing rate. It's just crept into everybody's language, but you'd never say, oh, the kid failed in the, you know, the discus. That's not how it works. It's a misleading thing to say passing rate because we totally have control over it. We control who takes the test and who gets in the class, and then we can manipulate our passing rate. I can tell you that our passing rate went down this year across the district from last year. But it doesn't bother me at all because the real fair statistic is our production rate. Our production rate can't be manipulated. It's the numbers of 3s, 4s, and 5s per 100 students of your whole entire student body. So 9 through 12. And I can compare that with everybody across the country and everybody across the state. And then we're really comparing apples to apples. If you compare passing rate, like, you don't know what subset of each school everybody's picking. I could guarantee that we could have 100% passing rate if we were just very careful about who we let in the class and who we let take the test. So 3s, 4s, and 5s are important, but they aren't the point of it. We're going to look at a graph that's about 3s, 4s, and 5s. This is our production rate over time. The basically the number of threes, fours, and fives out of 100 students for the Mat-Su Borough School District since 2017. You can see we were there at 6.4 in 2017. We were on a steady decline. So about 4 out of 100 students was getting a 3, 4, or 5. And then in the middle of the pandemic, when all of this craziness is going on, I started talking about all this, and all of these administrators and teachers across the district believed in it, and they've been changing things dramatically. Remember last year talking about hockey stick growth? Like, this is pretty crazy that we went from 4 per 100 in 2 years. That number, I don't know why it won't appear, but it's like 9.1. We've more than doubled in 2 years. When I got this data, I was super excited. Like, I was hoping this would happen. It's what happened in Oregon, and it's what's happening here because all of these administrators and teachers believe in this stuff. Okay, I was being a fan. Now I'm going to be the coach. So how do we rank compared to other places? Well, I've already showed you this one. Like, we had 1,214 tests, but to be average in the United States, we would have needed 1,650 last year. So we have room to grow. How about our production rate? How about the threes, fours, and fives? Even keep in mind, ones and twos, the kid may have learned more than the kid who got a 3, 4, and 5, depending on where they started. The red line is the United States, and the blue line is that same blue line. It's us. When you look back there at 2020, we were like less than 25% of national average, like 22.5% of the national average. Now we're more than 50% of the national average. During that time period where the rest of the United States really lost ground, we more than doubled. So, but we do have a lot of room to grow, right? Like, we need to double again to catch and pass them. I put this next one, it's the same exact data, the red line and the blue line, but I did put the state of Alaska on there. They haven't published the state of Alaska's data from this last round of testing from the spring of 2022 yet. But I guarantee we've passed the state of Alaska. And what's most interesting to me is that we were behind the rest of the state until this last year. We're big enough that we are going to manipulate that yellow line. The state of Alaska is probably going to gain, and it won't be because of the other districts. It will be because of what our students and our teachers and our principals did. So there's that league, but could we, like, get into a better league? Can we get into, like what's the top, you know, what's the NBA doing? Okay, here's the next one, and I try not to do this because it's just, I don't know, I just try not to do it. But sometimes I have to compare. This is that same graph from before of how many tests we've taken and what we needed for national average and what we would need to keep up with what I did with folks down there in Oregon. I know we can get to this league because we're on the exact same trajectory as what happened in Corbett. It's the exact same, the slope of the line are eerily similar. It's going to take time, but I can feel that, like, the Titanic has turned. Next slide. So talking with the principals, you know, why would we do this? Well, have we met all those absurd aspirations for kids? Like, do they all graduate on time? Have they all been admitted to wherever they're going to go? Well, no, they haven't. And I, you know, I admitted to everybody, we're never going to get here. Like, I'm never going to be satisfied. I'm always going to want us to keep getting better because these will never be yes answers to every single one. But I know that we can change things. And to change things, you need leaders who will lead change. And the next slide, we talk about the big changes that we have on the docket for this year. PLCs and teacher clarity, we've talked to you about a lot. In fact, tomorrow, the whole professional learning will be for principals about PLCs. The 4 C's was a big change last year. We're going to continue modifying it. We have pockets where, in general, every achievement improved across the entire district because of it. But we saw places where it worked better than others, and we're going to try to learn those lessons or take those lessons that we learned last year and spread them across the district. Of course, the math curriculum is in our second year. We're going to be coming to you asking you to change graduation requirements again based on feedback from our secondary principals. And then, of course, I talk about AP, IB, and dual college, and then continue to expand our CTE and I always try to circle back to this. What I just showed you with AP is still one third of what we produce on CTE. Our CTE program really is stellar. It's like it is one of those top tier things across the whole country. And then I asked, you know, these next couple slides we can go through very quickly, was me asking just a little thing from all the principals that ask them to be change leaders, not change managers. And really, this is tongue in cheek because what I'm asking them to do is incredibly challenging to make big, huge changes like this. There's that same sticky slide. So skip that next one. Go to Good Things at Houston. On Thursday, August 11th from 4 to 6, in conjunction with Houston's open house, the borough is going to have a site walkthrough for the high for the project out there. You know, they aren't going to be able to go through the building. There's going to be stations around the building with different people talking about it. So if you can attend that, that would be great. And then my last good thing is we did have Girls Who Code in this very room last year, and it was quite fun to have all those young folks in the building. And that's just always a good thing. I think we had 70 or 80 girls participate this year. That is my report.
Thank you so much, Dr. Traney. Any board questions, please, Member Probasco, then Member Berge.
Thank you, Mr. Bonder. Could you, Dr. Traney, satisfy my curiosity about you're going to ask the board to change graduation requirements again?
Yep.
What does that mean?
Well, we're going to go through the whole process. I don't want to let the, like, I don't know what the analogy is, or let the horse out of the barn too early or anything. We have been, here, I'll do it this way. We were overwhelmingly 100% of the secondary principals last year asked us, can we please make it 4-year requirement of math? Like, they all wanted it. And then, like, you've seen me show the data of what percentage of our students, when they go to University of Alaska, have to take remedial math. And these are our kids who are going to college. And so that's one of the things that we're looking at today. But we want to go through that process with all of our administrators, teachers, HR. So that's what we're looking at.
Member Berge.
Dr. Traney, some thoughts. Fully in support of the AP program. We've discussed this many times, but a few things are coming to mind. Concerning our homeschool and concerning Mat-Su Central is a statewide homeschool. We are looking at the AP seminar requirement, which in meeting with the staff yesterday, they are working for that for Valley students, but because we are a statewide program and we start picking up students in Anchorage and Southeast and we start expanding our footprint, we're either going to have to develop a boarding school model to bring them to us to do AP seminar, or we are going to have to develop. I would prefer not to waive a requirement. I would rather put in the effort to develop a scenario that the student can achieve the requirement without a waiver. So, you know, that not applicable to our brick and mortar schools, but if we are choosing to expand Mat-Su Central, we need to look at that. And I would say sooner than later, because I don't think it's a problem right now. But it's something to look at there. The next thing that we need to look at is dealing with AP. We are having individuals who are coming to us with refugee status. We are gaining older students who English as a second language is probably not even applicable. But because they are fluent in their host language, they're ineligible for an IEP. An IEP. So I have heard that out of an administrator that there's kind of a void there, and I would look to hope that guidance will come. I don't think this is a major problem, but I do believe that we're going to start seeing refugees, and these refugees are going to come at us at all ages, and we need to be prepared.
Thank you, Member Berge. Any other? Member Taylor?
Well, I appreciate your presentation tonight, especially starting off with policy. helping us to see that more, be more transparent with that. You did make a comment or a request that if we have any policies that we would like to be highlighted, and I do, I have four. Would you like them now or later?
Now's good.
5124, 5131, 5131.02, and 5132. I would love to have those highlighted and transparent like this. Well, thank you.
Member Taylor, do you know which ones those are, or did you just write those down?
The first one is about grades being posted, how often.
You said grades?
Uh-huh. 5131 is about enforcing the policies. 5131.02 is about cell phone uses in schools and things like that. And 5132 is our dress code.
Excellent.
What was the first one?
5124 is about the posting of grades.
Posting of grades. Excellent. Thank you, Member Taylor. And just as a follow-up to that same slide there, Dr. Tranny, slide four with monthly board policy highlights. Well, you indicated that they will be highlighted on a monthly basis. Can you kind of maybe break down how you foresee that happening? And I'll just put it out there. My concern is that you highlight it and tell the principals, hey, we're highlighting this, and it's district that's highlighting it, and the principals get that and say, okay, but then it never gets down to the classroom level. How are you going to ensure that those policies that are being highlighted are being highlighted within the classroom level?
Well, I guess the first answer to that is we're going to, in our meetings with the principals, highlight the policy verbally with our principals. And then the next part is really supervision. If we, you know, we have our supervisors in the room and they work with our principals, and it comes to our attention that at blank school, whatever we've been highlighting is still not happening, well, that's a supervision issue. It's either a supervision issue, like we aren't supervising well enough, or it's like they aren't following our directive.
Sure.
And so that's,
I'm all about chain of command, right? Making sure that you give it to the next person who then gives it to the next person. But I'm also sure that, and I guess I shouldn't say I'm sure, but is there not a way that district communicates with all within the school district?
Maybe I understand what you're saying. Yes, we do that as well. And there's some of these, like, I gave the example of the political, and there's going to be more than one policy that applies to that particular thing. And I think some of you know that last year, the year before, at key times, I would communicate directly with all staff expectation around like that kind of behavior, like how we expect you to behave. What does policy say during an election? Like, what can you do? What can you say? What can you wear? I think it's going to be really individual on what, you know, what we're talking about. We're looking at another group of policies just about safety and expectations, you know, like simple things like you need to shut your doors. They're just going to come in different groups. And that one might be another example where I would communicate, not only where I would communicate with the principals, that we would communicate with everybody because the consequences of that are so dire or could be so dire.
Gotcha. And I guess just my thought is that there's policies, and if we have policies, but they're not being, you know, followed through with, then why do we have the policy? But the policy's there and we have the justification and the rationale and the reasons. However, if you're not executing on policies, then, you know, there's a piece of things can get out of hand very quickly, right? And go in a direction that was unintended. And so while there's the communication of these highlighted policies, and then there's also the oversight, but I would imagine that your staff here at the district level has a number of things that they have oversight of, and there's probably a lot of policies that currently aren't being implemented with no execution on the implementation of those. So I guess I would ask again, how do we ensure, what do we do about a policy that's not being, you know, the one that's being highlighted should be very clear for all, but we've seen the policies there that it's a binder, right? And there's a lot of them. I mean, is there a policy in there that gives any sort of recourse on what happens when a policy is not followed? I mean, or does this board need to create a policy? I'm sure that we could have some fun with that one.
Yep. I think 5131 probably speaks to this a little, doesn't it? Member Taylor?
It does. It speaks a little bit to that, about the principal enforcing them, but it doesn't give, I don't recall it saying anything if they don't do that, if they don't enforce the policy. I don't know. I think that's what Member Ponder, yeah, or President Ponder was asking.
Well, how about, because I don't have it memorized in my head, because like you said, the policy book is awfully huge. Why don't we have Cabinet look into this, and we'll either bring it back to the board in this setting, or depending on what we come up with in the Board Connect, if we can find something to directly answer your question.
Thank you. And I'm looking at, I think it was 5132 dress code, right? I mean, I know that there was, this was, I believe, before your time, a few years ago, there was teachers that would come in and talk about, you know, there is no dress code. There's a policy for it, but there is no dress code, and the policy states this, but that's not happening. And so, you know, clearly there was no change, or at least effectuated on its face. Of change. So just making sure that highlighting it as a step in the right direction, making sure that all understand and know what's in board policy for whatever highlighted section that was, but then it's, well, what's the next step? How do we ensure that this happens? Thank you. Any other board discussion on the presentation from our Member Larson?
Mr. Berge touched on the English is second language, or refugees that might be possibly coming into the district. Is there a big influx of possible refugees coming into the district?
I can answer at the high level, and if we need more information, I can ask Ms. Bartz to come up, because she's more familiar with this than I am. We anticipate around 120-ish was the last word I heard. Potentially Ukrainian refugee students. We have, was it 50-ish? Okay, we're gonna get the expert to come up right now.
Good evening. Kendra Bartz, Director, Executive Director of Federal Programs for the Mat-Su School District. Through the chair, we have about 45 registered right now in around the school district. So there are pockets of students gravitating towards Wasilla Middle and High School, Houston, Meadow Lakes. There's one other that I think I'm forgetting. And then a scattering around the rest of the district. So possibly looking at 120, maybe. It's our estimate right now, but there's more on their way.
And can you talk about the extra support that we're trying to put in place at the district level for these kids?
Yep. We have already posted, I believe, for an extra case manager, EL case manager, English learner case manager, probably going to be posted at Wasilla High and Middle for right now, and then looking towards the possibility of some more tutor advisors to help those students as well. And we did already offer support. We had one day of registration for those that couldn't get registered before. We had a day earlier this week, for parents to bring in students with translators and interpreters available.
Please, Member Larson.
Since there's a lot of refugees coming in, is there additional money, either state or federal money, that comes in to help support, because they are a class of refugees from a war? That's what I assume we're talking about. So is there some assistance that we can pick up, so we can pick up more staff members to assist in this?
You want me to keep going?
Yeah.
So I have reached out to the state. We can use some of our ARP homeless funds for this, and maybe possibly switch some monies around, but they will also generate revenue. And I look to Mr. Fulp for clarity on that. But with them coming in, they will generate revenue, like all of our students. And so that will be probably where most of the funds come from.
Yes, through the chair, that's correct. What Ms. Bart stated, with additional state funds based on the per ADM. So if we're looking at over 120 students that were not projected in the spring, that's going to increase the revenue forecast for the district in that regard. It will not lead to additional local funding, because that's not tied to the student projection, but the state funding will be adjusted.
Is there any kind of federal funding? I know because they bring them in, bring refugees in from a war-torn area and usually have some sort of federal assistance, or is there none, or grants to be applied for, or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm seeing a east-west head nod from Ms. Bartz, and I have not heard of federal funding either, other beyond what would be available through the FIT program and McKinney-Vento potentially.
Correct.
Excellent. Yeah, Member Berge.
Dr. Training, would a native speaker of a foreign language be, would they be eligible for a Type M certification through the state?
It's funny. Can I ask you to come back up again, Ms. Bartz? We put out a, we being the royal we, meaning Ms. Bartz, spoke to all of our administrators today about this exact thing about finding native speakers. Can you speak to that?
I'm not sure about the Type M certificate. I'll look into that. But we did put out, we're going to put out a survey to all staff that asks if anybody has other languages that they speak fluently or read and write fluently. We would like to know that so that we can get these families or other families hooked up with interpretation or translation services that we can offer within house.
And in huge generalities, I do think the Type M certificate is a potential for it. It would totally depend on what the person I'm seeing. I'm seeing mixed head nods out there, east and west and north south. So we can look into it.
Member Berge, did you have a follow up? All right. Anything else from board discussion? All right. Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to agenda item 8B, 2023-2027 long term strategic plan. Dr. Trainee.
So you have the new strategic plan document, and it looks like it was updated as of this morning, was the newest update. Mr. Fulp and his team could probably, Mr. Fulp, could you point to the exactly where the updates are and then maybe speak to the number of people that have viewed the plan or been able to view the plan through the registration process?
Certainly. Just so everyone's aware, and to eliminate any confusion, we did date the document August 3rd, 2022, but it is the same document that was released last week. We just decided to use the meeting date so that we could kind of track it if there were subsequent changes. But this is, there's been several iterations, and we wanted to make sure that this document was known to be the one that you reviewed during the August 3rd meeting. So that's why it's dated that way, but it was released last week. With no changes since then. Changes that we've made, and in board docs, you'll see two different attachments. One is the long-term strategic plan. We also printed that for you. Again, it's the August 3rd draft. And then accompanying that document is feedback that staff prepared for school board member comments and questions related to the long-term strategic plan from our work session in June. So you'll see not only was that feedback provided to board members in June with a Board Connect, but we also wanted to attach it here so that the public could see that if they were interested, and also for ease of access for board members. There were two different items that were brought up by board members, questions, specific questions related to capital planning, and they resulted in changes to the document. So one of the questions was along the lines of measures of success, and one of the measures of a success was that the Borough Assembly supports school bonds. And actually, as I state this, the documents that were printed for the back of the room are the June 9th document, and they're not the August 3rd document. So what's online in board docs is the accurate document. Okay, they have copies of August 3rd as well. Okay, the June 9th was back there, so that's what I'm looking at. That section previously, measures of success, stated that the Borough Assembly supports school bonds was one of the measures of success, and it was pointed out by a board member that it may be problematic to tie a measure of success to something that we're not in control of, such as assembly action. So we modified that measure of success to state that we would clearly communicate the need for school bonds to the assembly. So that being, when the board does determine what it is that we would like to pursue a school bond for and seek school bond debt reimbursement for projects, whether that's deferred maintenance or new construction, that we effectively communicate that, and we can measure that through the material that we produce, the presentation that we make to the assembly, so that that is how we would measure that, is it's clearly communicated. Another area of capital planning that was adjusted, previously it was absent from the document altogether, but it aligned with the revised legislative priorities that the school board had passed last spring. With the change in the fiscal outlook of the state, the board revisited their legislative priorities and approved adding a 50% match for the charter schools for their new school construction. So a board member brought that up, that that was missing from the document, and asked if that could be included. And we have since included that, again, linking that addition to the draft to the board's action to modify the legislative priorities last year. So what you'll see is in FY23, we added an action step of pursuing a 50% state match for American Charter, Birch Tree Charter, and Academy Charter School. Those are the two major adjustments, or the two adjustments to the document.
And could you, because I don't have the number in my head, I know you told me, you talk about the number of family members that are families in the Valley that have had a chance to look at the document?
Yes, so the document was posted to board docs in June. In addition to that, after a feedback from the school board about circulating it more and getting it out in the community, on July 1st, 2022, the draft long-term strategic plan was posted with a feedback form on the district's online registration landing page. That's where we directed all registration traffic, so that's where parents would begin the registration process for their child. It was that landing page at the district's www.matsuk12.us/registration. It's still up and a live link. This placement allowed for a large audience of stakeholders to review and provide input on the draft plan. As of Thursday, July 28th, the online registration landing page had over 12,000 views, and a total of 13,536 students had completed and or begun the registration process. It has since increased. So that was last week, and it increases about over 1,000 per day at this point. At this point, we have received no comments on the document, but it is out there and available for parents to review.
Thank you. Are there any board questions or discussion? Please, Member Probasco.
Well, somewhat related. So maybe it's a, I know our next item is the request for contract approval for the American Charter Academy, but where, what is the status of Matsu Central? We went out to, the planning's going on, and there was conversations with the borough about going to bond, and we're on a, that timeline is pretty short right now.
I'm going to ask Mr. Pope to talk about this one again.
Okay, thank you. Yes, the legislation was introduced at the assembly meeting last night. It's information memorandum 22-164 and ordinance 22-090. So it was introduced. There was no discussion on the item, but it was introduced as we understood it would be. It was a language to add the $24 million as requested by the school board in your resolution, add that to the ballot as a initiative that would be presented to voters in November. So that is was introduced last night, and interestingly, it is up for public hearing on August 17th. That's a Wednesday night. So the Borough Assembly will have a meeting the same evening that we have our board meeting on Wednesday because of the elections. So it's likely that myself or someone else will have to be over there during that evening while we have a school board meeting that's happening at the same time. So if there's any amendments that are offered to this ordinance, Dr. Train and I will be in discussion with the borough manager and assembly members and relay that information to school board members during the interim leading up to August 17th.
Thank you. Member Berge.
Okay, going back to the strategic plan here, 2 points. One, in reading the school board comments in one of the appendices, you know, it said new hires trained when? The response was August 3rd, 2022. This is a five-year document. So my question is over the next 5 years, was training only going to be offered on one date? And that doesn't seem realistic, but in the sense of this is a long-term living document, it's really needs to be careful about putting in specific dates on reoccurring events. And the next thing, looking at this document, is there needs to be an appendices included, in my opinion, that shows the timeline for the creation and what went on with this document. Mr. Fulp was very good at articulating when portals were open for parents to comment and different actions happened. Board comment took place in June. Staff action took place prior to that. But there's nowhere out there where the public can see any type of this timeline. So it just, we have been transparent, but we're not being transparent in telling folks that we've been transparent. And that would just be in a simple timeline added to an appendix, I think would solve that. And we could rest assured that be able to tell the public that this was not a document that was produced in a weekend staff action. So those are kind of my thoughts on what I've seen.
Thank you. Any other board discussion? I do have a question in relation to the strategic plan board member feedback, and that's on slide 4 where it talks about student achievement, and board feedback was science of reading. Administration response provides that many parents of children with dyslexia are proponents of utilizing the science of reading rather than a blended literacy or whole language approach, which have been found to be ineffective in helping all students learn to read by third grade. I'm just curious to know how quickly some of these things are going to be implemented. While this is a five-year plan, and if it's been shown to be ineffective in helping all students learn to read by third grade, but if we wait to implement this for 3 years, then we've had three more years of kids going through with something that could be ineffective.
Yep. I'm hoping that I can ask either Mr. Moen or Ms. Everett to come and speak to this one. I can tell you the short answer is we aren't going to wait 5 years.
Well, that's good. And hopefully it's not 4 or 3 either, but please.
For the record, Andrea Everett, Associate Superintendent of Instruction. So I'm so glad you asked that question. We have already had groups of teachers, actually 80 of them, who have gone through a very intense job-embedded professional development called Letters, and it was what was used in Mississippi to help them with their huge growth that they had. Dr. Trainee, I don't know if you have that data slide.
I'm looking for it right now.
So one of the things that we're monitoring is whether or not the professional development that we provide actually has the impact that we hope that it will. And so we looked at the cohort of teachers that took the Letters training and compared their academic achievement results to teachers who hadn't had the opportunity to take the training. And we found, at least in kindergarten, 71% of the teachers that took the Letters training outperformed the district average just in 1 year. And the training is actually a 2-year training, so they've only had half of it. So we're seeing huge improvement there. And I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting on it. In regards to, you know, these different programs that have been found to be ineffective in helping all students learn to read by third grade. So you've indicated that there's already been a process that's been implemented for the teacher development, and 80 of those teachers, is that what you said? Mm-hmm. 80 teachers have gone through that. Was that this summer or?
So 80 of them started last fall, and they'll finish their second year this year. And we have 40 more starting this coming year. So they'll take 2 years. And our intent is to add a cohort every year. You can add cohorts in increments of 40 at a time. We're focusing on our primary teachers first, because obviously those are the teachers that teach children how to read, and then moving on up into our third, fourth, and fifth grade teachers. So we have a plan for how we're expanding that out.
Gotcha. And does anybody know how long the blended literacy or whole language approach have been implemented within the district?
I can speak to that too. We do not have a blended literacy or a whole language approach currently in the district. The program that we have been using is called Journeys in Elementary, and it is closer to a blended literacy approach, but it does not purport to be a blended literacy approach. The big shift that we're making through PLCs is to empower teachers to be able to use the science of reading to help children learn how to read, regardless of the program that we have or the tools that we have in their hands, in their classrooms.
Okay. So when the administration response says that many parents of children with dyslexia are proponents for utilizing the science of reading rather than a blended literacy or whole language approach, which have been found to be ineffective in helping all students learn to read by third grade, isn't applicable in our district then?
No, it's not applicable in our district.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. And then with that, the phonics focus, is that going to go out this school year as being a focus throughout the entire school district?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so phonics is just one of the components of the five major components of reading, but one of the most important. And it already has been a focus in our district. It will continue to be a focus. So we have several tools that teachers use to make sure that phonics is taught the way it should be through the science of reading.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions in relation to this agenda item, the long-term strategic plan? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go ahead and move from agenda item AB, 8B, to agenda item 8C, request for contract approval, Wolf Architecture, RFP 22-08, design service for American Charter Academy School. Dr. Traney.
As you know, we have several of our charter schools that are in need of a new facility, and the board has indicated their support for that. So we did publish an RFP B22-08 for design services for American Charter. They went through a formal process, and they've selected Wolf Architect, I believe, as the firm they'd like to basically draw the plans up. I believe the contract is around $650,000. And as I understand it, they do have those funds on hand. That would position them very well for potential match. If you have a project that's can ready, that's already, you know, drawn up and ready to go, your numbers on your estimate of what it will cost are far more accurate than if you don't have the plans. And I think that's, with talking with the principal out there, that's why they want to move forward with this, so they can be ready to strike while the iron is hot. Have I missed anything, Mr. Fulp?
Right. Any questions in relation to the same? Any discussion? All right. Hearing and seeing none. Thank you, Dr. Traney. Is there anything else that we should know about that other than what you've just presented?
I don't think so.
Wonderful. We will close out agenda item 8, superintendent report, non-action item.
Can we have 5 minutes?
Then we will go ahead and take a quick recess of 5 minutes. Are there any persons to be heard in the audience or online on non-agenda items? Please come forward at this time if there are. Seeing none and hearing none with being online, we will close out agenda item 9 and move to agenda item 10, future items, future business. Upcoming meeting is August 17th, 2022 at 6 p.m. to a regular school board meeting here at the central office. Is there any other upcoming item, future items, or future business? Member Larson.
Possibly in the future. It doesn't have to be next board meeting, but there was a, I'll just read this paragraph out of an article. So it's quote, in short, the Department of Law opinion affirms that current practices in which many parents enroll their children in public homeschool programs and then use part of the money to pay for select classes and instructions in private and religious schools. And that practice has been affirmed. I just want to know what that means for the school district. I don't need a big hoopla on it, but what does that opinion mean for our school district, if possible? And it doesn't have to be next time, but sometime in here, early on. Also, last spring we talked about policies being reviewed by our attorney firm, and I'd like to see some sort of update on if that's a continuous program, which I believe it is, and where we're at on that. Those are the two future items I'd like to see. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Larson. Is there any other future items, future business? All right, seeing none, we'll close out Agenda Item 10 and move to Agenda Item 11, Correspondence and Board Committee Reports. Is there any correspondence or board committee reports? Member Probasco?
Thank you, President Ponder. This past Monday on August 1st, we had a meeting of the Joint Assembly School Board Subcommittee on School Issues. The agenda, a lot of conversation with our new bus company, Durham, and the location of their, I guess you'd call it their bus barn, and the process they're going through with the borough. I'm sure you've read over the summer emails from the borough and some homeowners in the area concerned about location and what's that going to do to their environment. But anyway, that's going to be ongoing. Dr. Traney discussed PLC Mondays to the borough. And any questions, you know, I'd ask you to reference the back-to-school paper where we want to change the trajectory of our students, and Dr. Traney discusses PLC Mondays. It's a good article. And then the Houston High open house, and today is August 11, and we received an email on the invitation from Julian Morrissey. And then we have a joint September assembly and board meeting. It's on September 13th. And if you have agenda items, you can submit them. And I believe they said we can sit on the higher pedestal with all the other assembly members at this meeting. So anyway, that's the committee report.
Very good. Thank you, Member Larson.
One question to Mr. Probasco. Where is the new Durham bus barn?
Okay, it's I went and looked at it the other day. Parks Highway, there's a frontage road, and it's called Tanya, the road that goes back. And it's, I'm trying to remember, there's a couple big businesses there. There's a car dealership, and what's on the other side? But anyway, maybe, I don't know, Mr. Pope, if you know.
Yeah. I can help
behind
a little bit
Alaska.
With that.
Alaska Sales and Service.
It's off of Blue Lupine, and you turn right behind Alaska Sales and Service right there, and it's tucked in back behind them.
And there
used to be a gravel pit.
Households up on a hill overlooking the bus area. So, a beautiful view.
Thank you. Member Berge?
Yesterday, the advisory committee for Mat-Su Central met, which I'm part of. One of the things that was covered was enrollment. At reporting at that meeting, their enrollment was 1,212 students. The significant part of that was that 424 students were first time to homeschool. So that I viewed as a significant number. As I shared earlier, there was lots of discussion considering AP course requirements and some difficulties there that homeschool students have. With that, another important event is Mat-Su Central's 50th anniversary is going to be celebrated on August 17th from 1 to 3. So if you have the time, help celebrate one of the oldest homeschools in the state of Alaska, if not the oldest. I don't know if Alyeska is older or not. Then there was discussion that ties into Member Larson's question is how student allotment can be used in reference to the new to the court rulings that have come down this summer. So that's developing. And another thing that was brought out quite extensively was the difficulties with MatSU Central's student information systems that they're having with all the different functions that they do that are unique to homeschool. So that was talked about. And that pretty much sums that up.
Thank you, Member Berge, Member Probasco, for those reports. Are there any other correspondence or board committee reports? Seeing none, hearing none, we will go ahead and close out Agenda Item 11, Correspondence and Board Committee Reports, and move to Board Comments, Agenda Item 12. With that, Member Larson.
Caught me with my eating. Thank you. Looking forward to a brand new school year and looking through the strategic plan and absurd aspirations. I'm looking forward to that. This is the first time in many years I've seen excitement from staff, from the principal on down, about student achievement accelerating. And I believe we can reach a lot of those goals through this strategic plan. Again, looking forward to a good, solid year. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Berge?
Yes. So a few things to comment on. Calendar date for November. With the borough change in election times, we traditionally take the first board meeting in November off. But in review of the dates, the borough will not have certified the election by time the second board meeting in November occurs. So there may be a need to adjust the schedule there so that we can actually conduct board business during the meeting after the election. So I'd ask that to be looked at. In reference to refugees that are coming in from Ukraine, one thing I want to bring out is refugees are different from immigrants in the fact that refugees may choose to go back to their homeland when the turmoil that necessitated their coming here is over. So when we bring these students into our buildings, we need to be cognizant that some may choose to return to their homelands when the current crisis is over. And we need to be not solely focused on ensuring that they fit into our society, but they also can fit back into the society that they left. Again, going back to Dr. Traney's philosophy of preparing them for every eventuality, and that is, you know, I would assume that an immigrant is here to stay versus a refugee who may or may not. So I'd just like to look into that. Another thing that I'd like to bring out is we need to look at how we search for new hires. I am sure that Ms. Gardner out there can attest that it is very difficult to fill many positions, not just a few select. And with those difficulties there, I would think that we need to spend some considerable time this year developing strategies, and I'm sure you are already working at that, but if there's anything that needs to be done at the board level to necessitate that, that we need to bring that onto our radar so that we can make Ms. Gardner's job much easier, if that is at all possible. With that, I hope everybody has a safe drive home tonight, and I hope the school year starts out well and only keeps on getting better. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Berge. Member Probasco.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to welcome the new members to Dr. Traney's team that are here tonight and look forward to working with you. And then our next meeting will be the second day of school, and I just want to wish all of our district employees good luck and thank them for all the hard work they're doing right now in preparation for that the start of the school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Probasco. I'm going to do something a little bit unorthodox because I already have. I'm rusty after 6, 7, 8 weeks. Dr. Trainee, missed you. In closing comments, my apologies.
Well, yeah, that was a perfect segue from Member Probasco because my closing comments were going to be to introduce some of our new employees. I'll just have you guys wave from the back. You did already get to meet Ms. Bartz, Executive Director of Federal Programming, and then Ms. Harris is our new Executive Director of Student Support Services, and back in the back corner is Mr. Moen. He's our new Associate Superintendent of Instruction of Elementary Schools. So all three of you, welcome, and thank you for being here tonight. Ms. Bartz, didn't mean to put you on the spot so quickly.
Thank you, Dr. Trainee. Member Underwood?
Yeah, I just want to wish everybody that's coming into the district here for the beginning of school, which came up real, real fast, well wishes, and I'm excited to see what comes in the spring of next year, just from all the implemented changes and encouragement for all the staff members to just keep at it. I know our number one goal is that we just have extremely productive kiddos that come out of our district in life and in education. And I just want to thank all the hard work of the staff. And it is a giant adjustment this year. So definitely looking forward to seeing what next spring brings from those adjustments. And just thank all the staff for all your hard work and welcome back. And I can't believe it's here already.
Thank you, Member Underwood. Member Taylor.
Dr. Trainee, thank you for the superintendent update. I really liked that layout. Seeing the policy up front and highlighting that, I like that change, so thank you. I would almost request that it be every meeting instead of every month, but we'll see what time has. But I appreciate that, seeing the uptick and what the effect of your absurd aspirations is having so far this quickly. I'm grateful for that, so thank you for your efforts on that behalf. And I'm excited for the school year and get it going, so thank you.
Thank you, Member Taylor. And I, too, would like to echo what my colleagues up here from the dais have indicated in relation to a new school year starting. It's always an exciting time. It makes me think about trying to get into the shoe business. But nonetheless, it is a wonderful time of year, and it's super exciting. And you feel the energy in the community in relation to the same. Also, I too would like to welcome those that have joined Dr. Trainee's team, and would just put out there that anything positive you've heard is true, and anything negative, just don't believe it in relation to the board. So, with that, I look forward to our upcoming meeting and really appreciate all of the information that was provided tonight. It's always it's just great. It's great to see things doing hockey stick curves, right? Whether you're a hockey fan or not, that's a great thing to see in the direction that we're seeing them go. So appreciate all of the hard work from staff. With that, I'll close out agenda item 12, board comments. And do we have need for an executive session, Dr. Trainee?
No executive session.
Wonderful. Well, with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
With that, we're adjourned.